We are celebrating Philippine Independence Day. How many years? 126. Okay, so I think we can reflect on the readings in light of the national holiday. Of course, Independence Day celebrates the freedom of a people, freedom of a nation to decide for itself, freedom from oppressive or colonizing influence or foreign control, freedom to choose one's own leaders, this sort of thing, freedoms that are fitting for a people. Of course, the Spanish didn't agree with that, at least not in principle, yes, but not in practice, and neither did the Americans. They agree in principle that people should choose their own leaders, but not in practice in the case of the Philippine-American War. And then the Japanese didn't agree either back in World War II. So the country, as we know, even though we're celebrating 126 years, it hasn't been 126 years of smooth sailing. Still, we celebrate the right and the responsibility of people to govern themselves, to choose their own leaders, and the freedom to live according to one's conscience. The question always comes down to, well, who's we? When we say we are going to choose for ourselves, or we are going to throw off foreign oppressors, well, who's we? In that case, in the case of the Philippine independence, it was the Filipinos saying no to the Spanish. But as you know, in every country, there's always a question of who's we, because that's where civil wars come up. There hasn't been too much, well, I shouldn't say that, there have been some civil conflicts. But because any subgroup of the we could say, well, we're the we, and who are you to tell us? The Cebuanos can say, well, who are you Tagalogs to tell us? Or I don't know, Maspateños can say, who are you Cebuanos? Or who are you Bicolanos? In other words, every group can say, we are the ones who are declaring independence. So that sort of thing is always difficult to sort out. And now, with China making claims on some Philippine territory, the question comes up again, well, who's we and who's saying what about whom and about what territory? In modern times, these questions are at the center, that at least people who recognize democratic principles say, well, these things have to be sorted out by a consent of the governed. Back in the days, well, in most periods of history, it wasn't quite like that. There was always someone who claimed authority, usually by royal decree or sometimes by religious authority. Let's look at today's gospel. Jesus speaks about the commandments, the law, the prophets, and he makes a distinction saying, I have not come to abolish the law. I have not come to overthrow the law. I have come to fulfill the law. Now, why does he have to say, I have not come to abolish the law? Well, we know, if you know the Sermon on the Mount, you know this is introducing the section where Jesus is going to start teaching something about the law which goes beyond what was commonly agreed upon. He's going to take the commandments and extend them or raise them to a higher plane. And he knows that some people are going to not like that. But apparently, he has to say, I have not come to abolish the law, because he's already facing the accusation that he is abolishing the law, that he's somehow subversive. Well, Jesus is accused of lots of things, right? On Sunday, he was accused of being possessed or being in league with Beelzebub. And he's often accused of breaking the law, violating the Sabbath, not following the tradition of the elders, and on and on. Jesus is seen as a kind of subversive element, threatening to those who are in charge. So he wasn't abolishing the law, but he was shaking things up. He was introducing some standards that were not exactly the same as what was understood to be in the law. And so he has to make clear from the beginning, I'm not saying there's no law, and I'm not saying that the law that you have is to be abandoned. I'm saying there's a higher, a more fulfilling way to live by the law. So those who feel most threatened by this sort of thing are those in charge. I'm kind of reflecting on this in light of politics and Independence Day, but this is the way it is. People in charge are the ones who tend to accuse others of being subversive. The people with no power, or the poor, I don't usually make that kind of accusation, because they don't feel threatened by that sort of thing. But people in power always feel jealous of their power. So probably it was the Pharisees and the scribes who were accusing Jesus of abolishing the law. Now, that was at a time when it was understood by everybody that law was a good thing, and all the Jews agreed law was a good thing and it shouldn't be abolished. This is, law is what gives us our identity as a people. In modern times, I mean postmodern times, there is an undercurrent of thought that seems to reject the whole idea of law, as if it would be good to abolish the law, abolish all laws, so that no one can tell us what to do, and we're free to do what we want. You know, that mentality, even though if it's not said so bluntly, so explicitly, there's this idea that no one should be able to tell me what to do, and no one's law is higher than my own law over myself. Which certainly sounds appealing to everyone's nature. Yes, I can do whatever I want, but if you apply that in a society, it very quickly brings about chaos, because everybody is his own law, and nobody is following a common understanding of law. So since we're talking about Philippine independence, we have to uphold the right of a nation to have laws, and the responsibility of citizens to submit to rightful authority. Jesus said, give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, right? Submit to the rightful authority of the state, but give to God what belongs to God. So there's always a higher law. Well, that brings us to today's first reading, this contest between Elijah and the 450 prophets of Baal. A great contest, a great drama. I've always said this is like a great movie, or at least a short movie or a short story. The drama is set up, the tension builds, and Elijah starts taunting his opponents, and then he pours water on the wood and all these things to make it even more dramatic. So what's going on here? Yes, it's a contest between Elijah and the prophets of Baal, but by extension, it's a contest between God and Baal, right? Elijah is just a servant of God, and the prophets of Baal represent Baal. So it's a contest of prophets, but it's a contest of gods. And that's the way Elijah frames the contest. Who's God? He's not saying, who's a prophet? I'm a prophet, you're a prophet. But he's saying, who's God? If the Lord is God, follow him. If Baal, follow him. That's where he's putting it. It's a religious question. Since it's the Independence Day and we're talking about politics, it's also a political question, because Ahab was supportive of the prophets of Baal and was not submitting himself to the Lord. And you see this in every tyranny, in every dictatorship. Wherever there's someone who wants to claim absolute authority, they always oppose the authority of God, some way or another, and the authority of the church, or representatives of the church. You see this throughout history. Gosh, you look around now, look in the, under any dictatorship, that one of the examples that keeps coming up is Nicaragua now. Nicaragua, they keep kicking out, they keep imprisoning the bishops and the priests. In China, they're always contesting the idea that the Catholics have some kind of allegiance to the Vatican. They say, no, we don't need that Vatican stuff. You can be Catholic if you want, but you can't be submitting yourself to some foreign power. Now, the political issue here is, I mean, whatever Ahab thinks about God, what he really wants is to be in charge himself. And that's the downfall of everybody, kings and citizens. And this is why it's the downfall of the people themselves. That's why when Elijah says, well, who's God, the Lord or Baal, they don't give any answer. Because that leaves them free to decide for themselves. They're just going to see what works to their advantage. In a sense, everyone is declaring himself his own God. And that's the way it is with idolatry, by the way. Why are idols so appealing, even though they're obviously not powerful? Because then we have the power. So if Baal is just an idol, but so what good is he? Well, if I have an idol, well, then I'm in charge. And this is what Ahab is saying. I'm in charge. Why does Ahab have such a difficulty with Elijah? Because in contesting Elijah, he's not just contesting another king. See, Ahab can handle rival kings. And he can handle anyone who submits to Baal because that leaves Ahab in charge. But Elijah claims to be at the service of someone else, someone higher, someone who holds a judgment against Ahab, and Ahab doesn't like that. He doesn't want to be held accountable to someone else. No dictator does. So those are all some of the subtexts behind this contest, but it's clearly a contest between the true God and all false gods, and we know how it goes. And Elijah knows from the beginning how this thing's going to go. That's why, and he's so confident. It's funny to him that anybody could think that they could challenge the true God. Who are you talking about here? And it should be funny to us too. It's put in a kind of comical way. Like, oh, maybe your God is meditating. Maybe your God's on a journey. Maybe he's asleep. Oh, maybe he has to be awakened. You better talk, better shout louder. He's really teasing them because he knows they're not talking to anybody. And the reading makes it clear. No sound, no answer, no one's listening. It's a nothing. It's a dead end. That's why Elijah is so confident. And as it happens, well, nothing happens when it comes to Baal, no matter what they do. And when Elijah says, answer me, Lord, fire comes down from heaven, consumes the sacrifice, laps up the water. It's very obvious that there's one true God, and he answers with fire. Well, great victory. But if there's one true God, then we must submit to him. His law must be respected. We can no longer claim autonomy or independence. We can't claim independence from God. We can claim independence from earthly rulers at different times. That's what we're celebrating on Independence Day. But there's no independence from the one true God. And any claim to not belong to God or to not have to submit ourselves to the law of God is a disastrous claim. It's appealing because we all want to be in charge and we want to do what we want. But what actually happens is we destroy ourselves because we destroy the very foundation of who we are. If we have no God, we don't have ourselves either. If we have the one true God and his law and his prophets, his commandments, then we can know who we are and we can flourish. We can put ourselves at the service of others. We don't have to worry about taking care of ourselves all the time. Well, that's the spirit of Elijah. Now, we don't have to get into dramatic contests, and that's usually not very fruitful, but we do have to recognize the decision before us is, will we submit ourselves to God, will we honor the one true God or not? Because whatever other options are offered are all false. Other gods, idols, ideologies, political systems, kingdoms, whatever they are, they're all false gods. And the question is, are we going to worship God, follow him, or not? And the right answer is follow God. Follow God. So when the Lord says, follow me, when Jesus says, follow me, we respond, yes, Lord, your will be done.